Hello. Welcome to the Electronic Frontiers Forum and our panel on Second Life. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Annette Pohlke. I'm from Germany. This is why my book, Second Life, Verstehen, Erkunden, Mitgestalten, is actually in German. Maybe it will be translated to English if enough people write to my publisher. I would be very pleased if this happens, but honestly, it's rather unlikely. In Second Life, I use the name Max Bergson, so you can also meet me there. If you find anything that I tell you here interesting and you want to contact me, you can do this by my email address, or you can also go to my Second Life blog at sl-log.de. Now, usually the audience is allowed to ask questions at the end of the presentation. I want to do it the other way around and ask a few questions first. How many of you have are actually in-world, are residents of Second Life? Wow. How many of you are in-world for 1 year or longer? 2 years or longer? 3 years or longer? Okay. When I was preparing the presentation, I didn't know what to expect, so I made it basically so that even people who never visited Second Life before will get an idea what it is all about, but I hope there are also some things that veterans will find interesting. You probably noticed that it was titled History and Future, and if we look at the situation of Second Life right now, first we take a look at the history. What is Second Life? It's a virtual reality created by Linden Research, Inc. Usually they are called Linden Lab. Technically, Linden Lab is a trademark of Linden Research. It's online since 2003, and it went through a massive hype in early 2007. You can put figures to that. These are the total sign-ups from January 2006 to April 2007, and you can see the rapid growth there. It's amazing. It doubled like the user population like every month. Then there was a backlash. It went through an equally massive anti-hype in 2007, only maybe half a year after the hype. So many considered Second Life dead by now, especially the media that hyped attention on it only a year ago. There's also a graph for this anti-hype. These are the most current statistics of monthly premium account growth numbers. I choose this on purpose because it looks like a complete disaster, falling from highs way down, even below zero. Now, of course, there's a little trick. The other were our total user numbers, and the total user numbers kept growing, but what we see are here monthly new users, not total users, and it's only premium accounts. Premium accounts are accounts where you get a monthly stipend and where you can own a little piece of land for no extra cost. So, yes, there's stagnation in Second Life, and yes, many people think it's dead for that. On the other hand, there are reasons why it fell so drastically, like Linden Lab slightly changed the conditions, like you get less money each week for a premium account. So this explains the sharp drop a few months ago. So the question is there a future for Second Life? And my opinion, of course, is yes, of course, or else I would not be here. But why? My first reason is that Second Life is a highly customizable and highly diverse environment that hardly equals anything else that is out there on the net. I made brought a few nice screenshots to exemplify that. Yeah. And what you should know is that everything that you see here is something that users built in Second Life. And one thing I very often hear about Second Life is that it doesn't look too good. Now look at that. If you know that all the content is user created, of course the looks differ drastically. So, of course, I choose some examples of really good looks in Second Life. like, this is a shopping mall that I really like to frequent. Maybe some of the users know it. Sorry?
Every time I go there,
it's Bear Rose, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. I just love that place.
I don't think there's anybody on Second Life who does not mention Bear Rose.
Yeah, because it's nice and it's reasonably priced. Actually, I tried to put together as many different pictures of avatars, and all these avatars are me. So what I try to show is the diversity, how easy it is to create a different look, and this is actually something that appeals to me a lot. It's like, I felt so good the last time when I had a Barbie doll at a girl, as a little girl, and I have a lot more different fashion styles from my Second Life avatar than I had from my Barbie doll. So you can see that it's really very much diverse. Now I'm also selected some beautiful places like the landscape. You maybe noticed that some pictures have a slightly different look. This has to do with the atmosphere. How you can see it now and the reflections on the water was only introduced with Windlight, a new graphics engine that was introduced a few months ago, I think in the main client. Yeah, it was in the beta version earlier. I really like those screenshots because it's a completely amazing look, and you have thousands of square miles to explore, and sometimes I spent hours in Second Life just walking around and looking for nice places and trying out how they look in different light. For example, this is the same place that you saw earlier. Here, where my avatar was dancing. So I sometimes spend time and try the best lighting and the best atmosphere to get different effects. And I also like taking pictures in Second Life. That's the same region, and there's a beautiful forest. And you can see there the role that textures play for a good environment. So if people say Second Life doesn't look good, it's mainly a question of textures. Actually, we'll see some other examples later, but even the bad look, I would say, is part of the diversity of Second Life, because in the end, the user decides if he wants to have a nice texture or if a very plain texture is still good enough for him. Yeah, like this is another most beautiful place, yeah. Actually, this is something else that I like about Second Life, that anyone can really build his or her own fantasy. There are places like this that imitate some really existing Earth culture. There are sims that are completely set in a Star Wars or Star Trek setting. And there's sims that, a sim is a region within Second Life that are completely out of this world and out of your imagination. Like, for example, this one. There's this one where I played around with light a lot. It's like an apocalyptic scenario. It's very beautiful. And you may ask, why do people build something like this? And aside of the beauty, this is a shop. So you can buy skins for your avatar, again, to make it more diverse. And you can see on this screenshot very nicely how the light comes out. And the textures are simply beautiful. Or this is Devil's Moon, really one of the very famous regions in Second Life for good looks. Of course, you can see that they are going for Blade Runner look. And what is most amazing, a friend of mine is a builder in Second Life, and she introduced me to this region. You will see the reflections in the water. And they even existed. Now we have some reflections in water. You saw this earlier. But these reflections, this is an old trick by now, but this was the first region that introduced it. They actually built everything twice. Once on the surface and upside down underneath it, and the ground level, it's actually semi-see-through, so you have an effect like it's a reflection in water. Yeah. This is another nice example for something that has been introduced a while ago. We will talk a little more about building later, but this is a good example for sculptures. Sculptures are freely formed building blocks.
It's a frame that's shape is determined by a texture, basically.
Yeah, that's a good description, yeah. So you can, build the pyramid in a 3D graphics program, then you export the information and can upload it into Second Life, and now it's possible to build really beautiful sculptures.
Also programming is in world called Slock, I believe. You can do simple sculptures in world without having to import it.
Yeah, because also you can buy some of them preformed.
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, he just added some of it. He said that. Yeah.
What about Sloth?
Yeah.
It's a you can actually get it. It's like 2,500 lin. You can actually design simple sculpties in world, and you don't have to use a CAD/CAM program outside.
Okay, I think we will have a lot of time to share insider tips later. Yeah. And this is another place that I really love, Wise. It's an art gallery in Dresden, Germany. So I know this place from real life, and it's one of the major projects. It's an official project. The art gallery paid for this, and it was replicated in Second Life absolutely accurately to the minute. So they took pictures from the original site. And like you can see the difference here, the texture of the building is not fully raised. Raised means something raises on Second Life means it appears in Second Life, and usually it takes a while before everything is fully there, so to speak. But here you can see how good the texture and background really is. You can see more or less every stone of the building, and if you walk through it, it feels a lot like you're really in the building. You can even see small details like the heating, or every detail that exists in the building has been replicated in Second Life. Of course, including all the pictures. So you can have a virtual tour through the Dresden Art Gallery with all its famous works. You can see in the back the Madonna of, I think, I forgot who it is. It's a very famous Italian painter. And the individual pictures are quite good as well. If you click on them, you will get a note card, a little text explaining the picture to you. So this is a wonderful example, in my opinion. Just look at this room. Look at the texture of the couch there. Or look at the floor. It's an example what you can really do in a virtual reality, that you can make a place available worldwide. And of course you can say, oh, it's not the same as going there in person, but it's a lot easier to log into Second Life and take a look than to actually travel to Germany. And I think this is, as a Dresden gallery, as far as I know, I think there's also a project from the Louvre, but I think it's the only art gallery that is completely in Second Life. Correct me if I'm wrong, there's so much you can never know everything.
Here is a Second Life Louvre, I believe.
So I choose another museum that I like a lot. I'm not sure if it's still available. It's Starry Night. It's a tribute to Van Gogh. I tried to go there 2 days ago just to find out if it's still around, and I couldn't teleport there. It said the region no longer exists or is temporarily unavailable. So I do not know for sure if it's still there or not. It's about Van Gogh, and what I like is, you see this is very similar. You have pictures hanging on the wall. But the interesting thing is that in this case, it was not a real-life museum that was replicated, but you will find all important works by Van Gogh that are often spread around the whole world in real life. So you can see all of his works in one place, even if only in a virtual place. And you can even do things like this. They took the famous picture of the sunflowers, there are several of Van Gogh, and they cut it out and place them as objects in the room. So you can even do things within a work of art that you can't do in real life. And of course, where this eye, you can click and you will get information on the respective art. What they also did, and this is most amazing, they created the pictures so that you can walk in them. You see the picture on the left, a replica of the original picture, and then you can see where the arrows are leading to. It's actually a room. And the things in the room are textures, are textured in a style of Van Gogh. You will see it when my avatar walks inside. You can sit on the chair and it looks exactly like the picture. This is another example what you can do with textures. And of course, in this way, you can get a completely new approach to the artwork. Like you can move around and look at it from the other side. And if you go outside, there's even a house. You see the picture in the front again. Ah, I should have put my avatar there, but I just didn't at that point. So it's a complete house that looks exactly like it looks in the picture. And of course, the picture doesn't look like the real life house. So it's artwork becoming more real again. I like those examples because they can demonstrate that a virtual reality like Second Life can really add new dimensions to our experience, something that you cannot do in the same way with a book or a movie or a picture or even a website. So what is also so interesting about Second Life, and I mean specifically Second Life as opposed to other virtual worlds, because there are many out there right now and there are new ones opening like every 3 months right now. There are also some virtual worlds that are even older than Second Life. Most important example is probably Active Worlds. It opened a few years before Second Life, but never became as big as Second Life, and there must be a reason for it. And one, I think, is that Second Life supports creativity better than other virtual worlds. And this is also the reason why I think it's not dead, because it's still the one virtual world that appeals the most to creative people eventually. Here's some examples, like you can customize your own avatar first with built-in tools. What you see there is the appearance menu. You see on the top left the avatar in Second Life. And when you open it up, you can change on the left, you can change the simple clothes that you're wearing, like you can have long sleeves or short sleeves. Or you can change the form of your avatar, which you can see on the right. So you can change the size from big to small. You can have fat or a thin avatar. You can have a male or a female avatar. If you look at this, there's a button, male, female. So you can change your gender with a click of a button. And this is a level of customization that I have hardly ever seen anywhere else on the net. Also not in games, where you usually can customize your avatar to a certain degree, but hardly to that level. Then you can also even customize your body language, because there's a menu where you can select gestures. In this case, I point, and you can even do like a little scripting. Like I can make my avatar say a certain sentence, like "go there" whenever I'm pointing. So there's a very, very complex level of customization. Then to get a really good look for your avatar, you will probably want to use third-party stuff. Like in this case, I took the same avatar, same posture, same hair, and just put different skins on it. And you can see that you get a completely different look if you use different skins. And there are really thousands of skins available all over Second Life. Some of them are given away for free. Some of them cost up to 1,000 or even more Linden dollars. And a Linden dollar is roughly 300 Linden dollars is about one real life US dollar. So 1,000 Linden dollars is
about
$4 roughly. And some skins are even more expensive, but 1,000 Linden dollars would be a normal price for an inexpensive skin for a woman. Skins for men are a lot more expensive. Yeah, because there is a lot more stuff for women around.
Yes.
Simple as that. I did the same for hair, same avatar, same posture, same skin, different hairstyles. And in this case, the hair is an attachment. It's called an attachment, like you wear it like you would wear glasses or an umbrella. You can stick it to your avatar and it moves with you, basically. And you can see you can go for many, 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 many different looks that way. And now the interesting thing is, I said, everyone can customize. Now, how come that so many different hairstyles exist? How come that so many different clothing can exist? And the reason is because everyone can create his or her own design. We had those built-in tools where you can have simple functions like making long sleeves or short sleeves, but really good clothing usually requires custom-made textures. There are templates available, and here are the steps that it usually takes to create custom clothing. Of course, I'm not a clothing designer. I know my design sucks, but that's not the point here. Mine is this t-shirt. It actually means my very first t-shirt. So you start with designing a texture, then you upload it, and you can wear it. And there you can see that you can customize it again with the built-in tools, like you can have long sleeves, short sleeves, high waist, low waist, etc. And then you can sell it. I mean, you shouldn't try to sell this t-shirt, seriously. It's okay, you know. But this is how the huge amount of various hairstyles, various clothing styles in Second Life exist. Talking about textures again, compare my ugly shirt with a jeans that look a lot better. So the same is true for buildings. This is a prim. A prim is an object, and everything in Second Life consists of prims. If you look at the menu, you can do a lot of things with individual prims, like you can make it a box or a sphere or a triangle. You can twist it, you can color it. Like we see here, I took a triangle and blew it up. What we see there, this is a so-called sandbox. Sandboxes are places where people can go and build. And you see all this different stuff in the back. It's all just trial material for someone. And here you can see this is somewhat complex. It's a complete house. And you can see how things like houses are built out of individual prims. And what is interesting is that every user has the option to build, upload textures, and without having to register, and almost without paying anything extra. Like in many other virtual worlds, you have to be registered as a designer first, and you usually I didn't check many of them, but for many of them you have to pay a fee to get registered as a designer, and only if you're a registered designer you may upload content. There is a very small fee attached to some of those building features. Whenever you are uploading something to Second Life, like a texture or a sound file, it costs 10 Linden dollars. But if 300 Linden dollars is one US dollar, you see that even those 10 Linden dollars are not really a lot of money. It's rather easy even for a newbie to get 10 Linden dollars. There are ways to do that. Camping. It's good to get $10. Yeah. So really everyone can create with using the tools that are already built into Second Life. You do not need, especially you do not have to pay, you do not have to register, you do not need anything special like a premium account. Really everyone can create. And this is what I see most important in Second Life, that attracts creative people. How? As we see, it offers an amazing freedom to create. Everyone can create on the spot. And you even have interesting features like you can allow other users to modify your creations. Like you can, usually other people cannot tamper with what you do, of course not. If you build a house, you would not want other people to be able to move the windows or move the doors. But you may want to build a house together with your friends, and then you can give your friends the option to modify your objects, and you can build a house together. So there are many options to create things in world. Second, and this is one thing that I find most important, and I think that an audience in the Electronic Frontiers Forum may be appreciating this. I feel like that in the media it's hardly ever mentioned. And to most people it seems to be completely irrelevant that only in Second Life you will retain your intellectual property rights for the content you create, for the textures that you upload, for the audio files that you upload. I know I'm sounding now like I'm trying to sell Second Life to you, but this is really something I find most important. In almost any other virtual world, I didn't try everything that is out there, but every single other virtual world that I tried so far, I had to sign away all my intellectual property rights the moment I created an account. Whatever you upload becomes a property of the company that runs the world. Only in Second Life you will retain the rights to it. You can use them. It can also be interesting because there was one example of a guy who created a game in Second Life and he could later sell the same game to a game company, for example. In every other online world, the provider of the online world, in this case it would be LinLab, would be the owner. Only in Second Life, the creator remains the intellectual property rights holder. And of course, to me, this is important. I do not want to create something and sign off all my rights automatically without having any choice in it. Then the in-world currency, the Linden dollar, is freely convertible to US dollars. This gave Second Life the bad reputation of being extremely commercial. This is partially true. A lot of the things that go on in Second Life are about money, just like in real life. But we should not underestimate how important it is that we have a currency and that it can be converted to real life money. Because having money means that you can easily exchange services and goods. If there's no currency, how can you exchange things? Like, for example, I earn my money in Second Life as a scripter. I write scripts. And now I can sell my services to people. And with the money, I can buy clothing, for example. As you can see, I'm not a good clothing designer. So I can do what I can do well and use the money to buy what I cannot do well. So a currency is very important for a developed economy and in a developed service system. Then another interesting thing is that the client is open source under the GPL license. It's a bit unsure if the server will ever become open source as well.
There is an open source version, the OpenSim project, and there's a couple others that are running.
Yep.
A little bit different, but.
Yeah. There's a big demand for it for various reasons, and I think it's a possibility. But there has been talks about this for, I don't know, at least 2 years since the client became open source. And I can understand why it's more difficult for LinLab, from every point of view. It's more to the core, and even it's more to the core of their business model. You just have to admit this. But I think it's still a very nice, nice idea to just go in that direction. And even if Second Life is maybe not going far enough, in the opinion of some people, they went further than other virtual worlds. This is actually a point that is very important to me. Second Life is often criticized, for example, for being too commercial or for not having an open source server software, but they're actually going further than most other comparable projects. So my conclusion is that there are many incentives and opportunities for creativity, and that this is the reason why Second Life attracts more creative people than other virtual worlds. Okay. There's a question?
I've been to one concert in Second Life. Where is the music coming from?
Usually it's streamed into Second Life. It's possible to stream media into Second Life, audio and video. So it's the same as when you're listening to internet radio, you're doing basically the same thing. Yeah?
I might be able to clarify that a little more. One of the things I do in Second Life, I DJ several clubs. And what you do is you get a program like SAM, which encodes what you're playing and streams it to a Shoutcast server. When somebody comes onto the parcel,
wherever the club is or whatever, that's set to that stream, that Shoutcast server replicates to all the people in that. Because this video content is usually on a website, you put it in your LAN settings. So when you walk in, you hit media, you hit play the media, whatever prem is to set display that, hits that web server and streams the content there.
It just seemed a whole lot more spontaneous than Shoutcast, and you was playing it somewhere.
Yeah, you think it's a streamlined audio.
Yeah, I mean, it's MPEG audio, basically.
Yeah, and it also depends on the quality of the streaming server, and this has nothing to do with Second Life, but it's provided by whoever owns the land, because it's the landowner who can set the media settings for a parcel, and the landowner can decide which music or which video is streamed to the parcel. Yes?
One point that I haven't seen you make and why Second Life is cool is that it also provides an opportunity for you to kind of become your dream occupation. A friend of mine who can't actually work because she's too infirm is a clothing designer in Second Life, and so it enables her to live out her dream in a way, and she actually makes enough money to support herself selling clothes to send in.
That's a wonderful story.
Makes about $26,000 a year.
Wow.
And she is what clothes does she design?
Silent Sparrow.
Oh my gosh, one of my favorite places.
Which one?
Silent Sparrow.
Yes, I was there last week.
I didn't know she had her own center, but there was,
yes,
I know she worked at a Beck and Dollar for a while. So.
Oh, no. Well, she also has satellite shops.
Just a minute. What I like about this, I actually also wrote my master's thesis about Second Life, and it was a master's thesis in intercultural education. So, and one aspect that I found very interesting is culture. We usually think about ethnic cultures like German, US, Korean, Chinese. But there are also other cultures that I find even more interesting, like the culture of deaf people or people with disabilities. Or I think in Second Life, probably most of you are aware, people with autism are a very important group in Second Life. And this option to compensate, but also express yourself in a way that is not possible in real life for various reasons, is something that I find really very valuable about Second Life, and it's really something that makes, maybe our world a better place. Okay, first there was a question in the back.
I'm somewhat involved in Second Life, but I've been tracking it just as an interest to see where things will go with virtual worlds in the future, because although it's interesting to me, I'm not an artist, so it's hard for me to really get into the building and designing, and it wasn't something that was completely for me, but I'm very interested in the idea and the concept of what it can be. Why do you think that it seems that Second Life does so well with artistic communities, so well within software development groups or just like-minded people, but it's having a very hard time breaking into the mainstream? Everyone predicted it to be much further along than it is right now.
Yeah. Maybe you just explained it yourself. Maybe it's difficult if it's good with a... you just said it like the underground cultures or the geeks or the niche people. Maybe it's not good for mainstream people. It's just what I went through my mind when you explained it. But actually there's an interesting discussion going on right now the last few weeks. I'm on the educators in Second Life mailing lists for obvious reasons when I wrote my thesis in intercultural education. And there was a current discussion. Educators in Second Life have one problem. There are many, many, many of them, and they're all excited about this wonderful tool, and they all want to use it to teach. But their students are often less excited. And there's a current discussion, why are students not excited about Second Life? Why are the teachers excited, but not the students? Of course, there are students that are excited, but usually the teachers are more excited. And there's right now a discussion with some very interesting articles on various blogs that brought forward the theory that Second Life mostly appeals to the Generation X part of the population. And that this is really a very unfriendly setting for younger people. because they have different ideas how things should work. And what I pointed just out that Second Life is a wonderfully diverse and open and free and a great place for creative people, that these qualities may actually be rather
intimidating,
yes, that young people today often prefer more structured environments. Like, compare it to the games they grew up. And if I say that, I feel like I'm 100 years old and a granny. But actually, if you compare it to World of Warcraft, for example, I think it's a good comparison. There are many similarities. Both are virtual worlds. Both are 3D graphics. Both are a lot about doing things together with other people. I had the example of building a house in Second Life. Now, in World of Warcraft, organize a raid with your friends. It's very similar. But the difference is, if you go into an MMORPG, you usually find a much more structured world. There are quests to do. There are places to visit. There are rules to follow. There are levels you can reach. And it's very interesting that Second Life, what people see in it, it depends a lot on their former experience. If people mainly come from, if they did a lot of chatting before, they will see it as a 3D chat. Often people say, oh, it's a 3D chat. And then you know, okay, those people use the internet for chatting a lot. And of course they see Second Life mainly as a chat. Or if people come from the MMORPG community, they see it as a game. One of my really most wonderful Second Life experiences and best stories I like telling is I was working as a mentor in the German tutorial. There's a tutorial in German and in front of my building, and it's really nice, and I worked there as a mentor for a while. And someone, a newbie, came in, and his very first question was, how do I level here? And I think this is the reason why Second Life does not appeal to some people. There was another question?
This is how you level.
Perfect. Yep.
I'm curious about your thoughts about the ability to sort of shift identity, you know, how you can be active about anything that you want to be. I even change gender. Right now I'm a guy. And then you have people who can be, dragons. I mean, it's like just go out to DragonCon and that you'll see people like that in Second Life.
Yeah, I like it, but again, this is my personal opinion. Actually, this is as I said, all these avatars you see is me. So yes, I like it. I love it. But I know other users who prefer to stick to their real-life selves. I even know someone who had a skin custom-made so that his avatar resembles himself as much as possible. It's a completely different attitude. And I wouldn't say one is better than the other. It's just different. Of course, it brings up the old problem that you have on a chat, like, is it dishonest or is it betraying someone if, for example, you're a woman in real life and your avatar is male or the other way around? And it depends. There are many different answers to that.
Angela Thomas, have you read her book? Angela Thomas is an Australian professor who writes about avatars and identity in Second Life, and her website is angelaathomas.com.
I'm not sure right now. It looks, sounds, it's very interesting. Yeah. No, I didn't. I think I didn't yet. There was something else I wanted to say. Just a second. Oh, I'll do it when it comes back. Yes?
The description for the panel mentioned something about the media or somebody branding Second Life and other online societies as Web 3.0.
Yeah.
What were you going to discuss that, or what do you feel?
Actually, I still have a few slides about
it. Oh, great. Awesome.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I didn't want to stop the questions. Yeah.
Do you think an economy based off of artificial scarcity is either preferable or sustainable?
Oh, could you repeat, please?
Do you think an economy based off of artificial scarcity is either sustainable or preferable?
Artificial what?
Scarcity. Oh. Could you give me an example, or where's the connection with Second Life?
Like the Linden Dollar, the land, the sort of the concept of intellectual property. It's very...
Yeah, I guess what you want to say is you could be even a lot more radical. Like, you could not only
I'm not sure if it's really sustainable, because, you know, it doesn't... The Linden Dollar, they sort of just print it, essentially.
Yes and no. Of course, it's artificial. It's not a real currency. But on the other hand, it's not like they create Linden Dollars, because there's this Linden exchange. It's really like a real currency, insofar as if I want to buy Linden Dollars, they're not created. But I have to buy it from other users. So buying or selling Linden Dollars has no effect on the total number of Linden Dollars available. Of course, there are money sources and money sinks, like in every other virtual and real economy. But it's not like if I buy 1,000 Linden Dollars, they print them. So I'm not really sure where this...
And they offer it at prices which is far more than the resources that...
They got to turn profit somehow besides sticking
people far more.
But is it really, the question is, why is it bad? As he just pointed out, they have to get the money somewhere. And especially the land represents real existing servers that are hosted somewhere. So it's like a hosting fee.
Pay their colos, they got to pay for the SIMs, the servers, they got to pay their developers that write this stuff. If they didn't fiddle with the actual exchange rate on the Linden Dollar when you buy it, then the people who then say, I wanted to add a SIM to my estate, I would get reamed. They're going to make it somewhere. They just dropped the SIM prices, so they're going to have to change it somewhere else if they want to, you know, keep on an even keel.
And I prefer that model, because everyone can enter the world and explore it and make use of the many possibilities, and there's only one thing that is limited, and this is owning land. And I think that's okay. It's a lot better than paying a monthly fee for just being in world.
Well, it's mainland that they live in.
Yeah, but in the end, it's the same with private islands. You do not need a premium account to be a landowner on a private island.
No, but I think it depends on the estate. You don't have to be premium to buy a region.
You have to be, I don't know, but you have to buy a server.
But you don't have to be a premium member to rent from somebody who owns it.
Exactly, yeah. So you can effectively own or at least rent land even without having a premium account. So you can adapt it to your actual needs and how much you earn in Second Life or whatever. So I think it's pretty flexible. Yeah. How about I continue with the second part of my presentation? Yeah, because this was history. Now comes the future. Of course, only I selected a part of the future or an aspect of Second Life that I found interesting. And it was mentioned Web 3.0. Of course, this is a catchphrase. We have this huge Web 2.0 hype. And of course, when you have 2.0, what will be 3.0? And I think people also choose 3.0 for Second Life a bit because it has a connotation of 3D. So it's a bit like the next web will be 3D, and Second Life is an example of it. That's the theory behind that. Now, I think that this is actually the most important potential of Second Life that is only marginally explored so far, and that is Second Life as a part of the internet. Most people see Second Life as a world separate from the rest of the internet. Most people are not even fully aware that when they are in Second Life, they are still using the internet, not any different than they would do when they were surfing a website or when they're reading emails or when they're chatting over IRC or ICQ. And I think that bringing together Second Life and other services, applications using the internet is really the most important and area of application that really has a lot of potential. And I try to find examples of this. Yeah, as I put it, Second Life can interact with other web content and even with real life, which will bring us to something similar, like that's a concept that was mentioned. First example I choose was interacting with real life. In this case, this is a symposium held last year on education, of course. And the symposium was held in real life in London. And when I learned of it, I was, oh my God, I have to go there. How can I arrange a trip to London for next week? And then I learned that the symposium was booked out anyway, and I was devastated. It was like, oh, I'm so much into this, I have to go there. And then I learned that they will actually host it in Second Life as well. So it was an event that took place at the same time in real life and in Second Life, and it was really a very amazing experience. There were several regions in Second Life where you could go, and they set up large screens, as you can see there, and the speakers in London would be streamed into Second Life. Video streaming, as audio streaming has been mentioned before. So you could follow the presentations. Now, this only sounds like, okay, fine, it's like watching TV. But what they did, and you can see this, you see there a picture of the room in London. They had huge monitors there as well. And just like the talks in London were streamed into Second Life, the Second Life picture was displayed on the monitors in London. So the audience in real life and the audience in the virtual world could see each other, could talk to each other. This was before voice feature was introduced, so it was still all going through chat. So it was possible to be in Second Life, listen to the presentations, ask questions to the panel, just as if you were there in London. And it was a lot cheaper. I didn't have to buy a plane ticket. It was a lot more environmentally friendly. There was a lot of discussion about a few months ago how environmentally unfriendly Second Life is because of all of the servers that had to be put up. Compared to a trip to London, my avatar is very, very environmentally friendly. And also, it saved my time. I mean, going to London, this is a three-day trip. This way, I could go to the symposium in the morning and be back in my home and for noon. Okay, there you see it again. A question directly to this event? Okay. And this is another example, slightly more complex maybe. This was the showing of a documentation about Chiapas in Mexico. Sorry?
No, I'm from Chiapas.
Ah, yeah. And Uso Ventura is a Second Life name of the author of this film. He made a documentation. And this documentation was shown in Second Life, and the author of the film would discuss with the audience. And he actually has a site in Second Life where he rebuilt the... Yep. Isn't that beautiful?
It's in the middle of the jungle. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And again, you have this option to be there, not really real, but at least virtually. And if you look on the back, you'll see that he had the architecture. So you can, the back is actually cut open so that you can look inside and you can move around. And after the showing of the documentation, he offered whoever wanted to go a tour through the site. So I think this is really a great way to promote things and even get in contact with people. It's different. I mean, we live in the time of the internet. I could have downloaded the documentation from a website just as well. But being there and talking to other people about it, it was really like a real life event, just that I would not have been able to meet all these people in real life because we were spread all around the globe. So that's what really amazes me about Second Life, that it's like you really meet people. People you could not as easily meet in real life. Yeah. Maybe next year I could give my presentation at DragonCon virtually. Yeah, this would be one example how Second Life interacts with real life. Then Second Life interacts with the web. This is a shop, the OnRails shop. There are one or two others, but this is one of the two biggest, I think. And you can buy things for your use in Second Life through a web page. You see the interface there, you see the product, and if you click buy this item, it's delivered to your avatar in Second Life. How it works, on the seller's side, you get a box in world, and you have to put the things that you want to sell in that box and upload an image to the website. So you have to register on the website, link your avatar to this website, get the box in Second Life, and then you can sell your like clothing or the house you built or the scripts you wrote in Second Life through this website. So this is an example for interactivity between websites and Second Life. This is possible because you can make HTTP calls from within Second Life through the scripting language. And now an example that is probably not as famous or as good looking, and yeah, the textures suck, but this is something I like talking about because I usually try to talk about things that I experienced myself or did myself. And this is about the Star Wars Combine. This is an fan-made online game I'm involved with. And of course, being involved with an online game, being involved with Second Life means I had to put those two things together somehow. And it was like a small test case for me to try out a few things. This is mostly to advertise the game in Second Life. You can go there and see slideshows, but what interests me is that you can then, there you see it, you can go and just read about it. It's interactive, but okay. What I find interesting is you can then link your Second Life avatar to your game account. So, and then you can interact with a game through Second Life. Sounds more than it really is. Right now you can do one thing. You can donate money to us. But of course, as we are a complete zero-budget volunteer project, we depend on donations to prepare our server and all that. And what is interesting about this is that we now accept donations in little dollars. And when you make a donation through Second Life, automatically you will get a small reward in the game. So I have a few screenshots to show it. I donate money in Second Life. Then I get a message. It's a bit confusing because it's thank you for your donation, Max Bergson. Max Bergson donated 20 linen dollars to the Combine, and you paid Max Bergson 20 linen dollars. Of course, I'm the sender and the receiver in this case because this goes through my account. But what is interesting is when I go then to our webpage of the game, I can see that you see the event. Jennifer Drayton awarded 60 CPs to Jennifer Drayton. Okay, Jennifer Drayton is my game account, and CPs are formed to reward players for anything they do to help the game to survive. So, of course, this isn't spectacular in itself. But what is interesting about it, I can make one game universe interact with a different virtual universe. Actually, it would be possible and quite easy technically to build a game interface to our game in Second Life. You see, it's about Star Wars. So you could build a game interface that is not a website. As you can see, is a screenshot of the game here. I think it's okay for a fan project, but now think about it. Think about it, you're playing a Star Wars game and you do it in a 3D environment like you're doing it on a bridge of a Star Destroyer. It's easy enough to build this in Second Life. You've seen this wonderful Star Trek environment. Now the question, why didn't we do it so far? First, it has not a high priority. As I said, it's a project that interests me for its potential, but it's not high priority for our game. And there's one problem with it. The game is a lot about strategy. So you cannot risk others to find out your game data, like which ships you own, how much money you make, and this is a huge problem in Second Life. Because you have the camera controls and you cannot display anything in Second Life and make sure that no other user can see it. except if you put it on a HUD, heads-up display that only the user can see, but then you would have a display that actually looks like a website, so then people go to the website as well. But of course, the idea is that you could create, for example, a game universe and build an interface in Second Life is very appealing, I think, and especially insofar as it stresses one other thing that I find interesting about Second Life and important. Of course, you could say, well, what's so special about it? I can play World of Warcraft, it's 3D. True, but World of Warcraft is a $1 million project. What interests me is that a small fan project like ours could easily build a 3D interface through Second Life. So Second Life is good for prototyping, for developing new ideas, for easily trying them out without having a $1 million budget. So this is where I actually see the true potential of Second Life, bringing it together with other web applications, making it interact with many other web applications. I think, yeah, another example. I choose again something that I did myself. For example, this is my blog, and you can see Max Bergson is offline. This is a small Second Life status indicator that I have on my blogs so that you can see when I'm in-world. It's a prim with a script in Second Life that will keep a database. No, it's not even, I don't even need a database, but you do need PHP to do it, that writes to a PHP file and writes my status to this file so I can display my online or offline status on my own web page, and I can even customize how it looks. And this is actually quite easy. It's so easy that I do not understand why not more web pages use it to make Second Life interact with websites. And it actually works both ways. You can equally send data from the web into Second Life. Like you could have someone fill in a form and send the data into Second Life. And I think this is really the most interesting direction to go to. What I showed you right now are mostly small individual projects that I do because they interest me, or fan-based projects. But if you look at what some really big names are doing, what IBM is doing right now, IBM is cooperating with Second Life, and one of their projects is, actually their motivation is that they like the potential of Second Life to have virtual meetings as well. And their problem is similar to what I just said about displaying game data in Second Life. Of course, there are conversations that you would not want to have in a public place about company policies, about private things, basically. So they would like to have their own Second Life service, more or less. And what they recently worked on with LinLab is to make it possible for an avatar to cross from Second Life to a Second Life environment on an IBM server. So where this may lead to is a multitude of virtual worlds that use Second Life, you could say, as a software, as a standard, or even OpenSim, because, yeah, let's stick to this. And the user could move to any of these virtual worlds that would be connected, but it would no longer be controlled by one provider or one company. So where I think this is moving is that Second Life is an example, and it's also not so much a product or an application, but it's more something that is defining a new standard. And I think that this standard has a lot of potential, even if the name behind it may no longer be LinLab in like 3 years or 4 years. I mean, I expect LinLab to still be on the market in 4 years, but from their policy so far, I think they're aiming for something much greater than developing a product and selling it to people, and that is to develop a new technology and a new standard, and so far I think they are doing pretty well at it. And this is why I think that Second Life still has a future. I put together a few resources for you. I think if, after my first question, most of you will not need them. If you want to know more about Second Life, these are the official pages. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, of course. So if you really want to see something beautiful and interesting about Second Life, go to the last one, Torley Lynn's homepage.
God, I remember watching her, watching Torley, figuring out how sculptures work.
He keeps making videos. Just go and see it for yourself. So, and this brings us to the question section, officially. Yeah.
I keep going back to the mass market idea.
Yep.
And have you heard anything about Darkstar?
Nope.
From what I understand, I could have this completely wrong, so don't correct me if I'm wrong, but Linden doesn't allow people to develop applications directly to be launched in Second Life, correct? Like, if you have a whole new software program that you want to run, Linden Labs has to create that, correct?
You can script
what
it.
I write script all the time.
Yeah.
More flexibility with it.
Does anyone here know more about the Darkstar thing?
Sun is apparently launching something that's supposed to be more open source, more open platform to compete with this. Yeah, in order to bring more people into the development process.
Change pretty much anything in Second Life. You can change the URL right now, IDs in fact. You can script in Second Life.
So you don't see any limitations?
I don't see any significant limitations except resources.
There's a wiki entry on LSL that, and Mono that will teach you all, that has all the function calls and everything. There are people in the world who will teach you how to script.
I think there is one limitation. There is one limitation, and the limitation is that so far the server only runs on servers owned by Linden Lab.
The point of my question is all these great things exist, and they exist for this wonderful niche of brilliant people. When something comes along that appeals to the mass market, what happens then?
We will see. In the end, if someone comes up with a better solution, even the better.
Okay, all right.
If I write a script, the script is mine. I can take that script.
Okay, other questions? Yep.
One thing you haven't touched on that was kind of interesting to me is what's going on with nonprofits. For instance, I heard that Run for Life this year actually broke a record for how much money they raised.
Yeah. Nonprofits are big in Second Life. That's what I can say. I think it's a special case of what I said. It attracts creative people, social people. And the good thing is what I mentioned, it's for the biggest amongst them. Like, if you haven't been, I'm not sure if it is, it's strictly non-profit, but go to the WMF Island, World Wildlife Fund Island. It's very beautiful. It's an example of a huge project by such an organization. But the interesting thing is that even the smallest project can almost afford to have a small presence on Second Life, and that's something that I like about it. I can remember I joined, I think 3 years ago roughly, and that was right after Hurricane Katrina, and you couldn't go into any club without having a donations box for victims of Hurricane Katrina. So there's a very strong history of non-profit and charity and all that in Second Life.
Now, if you have a good enough cause, you find a landowner.
And there's another question, or directly to this.
Well, yeah, it was about the nonprofit.
Okay. In the back?
I'd like to hear you speculate. Let's say everything goes great for Second Life. 20 years from now, what do you imagine Second Life would be like?
I don't really know if Second Life will even still be around, but I think all of us will be as used to living in virtual worlds as we are now used to checking our emails daily or sending SMS. So I think virtual worlds and living in them and using them to the best of their potential will become a part of everyday life for everyday people. This is what I expect.
Do you think it's going to be like a permanent way to social network, like Facebook, MySpace, all that kind of thing? Similar to that?
Yeah, what was the question about?
Do you think it's going to be similar with social networking as far as like Facebook and like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think, though I would expect them to merge as well. Probably we will still have 2D versions of it, because some things, why do it 3D if you can do it as well in 2D? But I would expect that you would have your 3D version of Facebook, for example, more or less. Yes?
My question actually branches right off of that. What do you think is standing in the way between that happening? Why hasn't Second Life or other similar systems experienced that push from the social networking hype? What do you think has to happen for that to be popular?
I'm not even sure if it did not happen, at least to a certain extent, because, like, example, Second Life now has like 40 million something user accounts, so it grew by like 10 million in the last year, roughly. I wouldn't say this is not a big push. Yeah. So many people came to this world and gave it a try. I think you mean there are still very different and separate communities on the internet. But isn't that in other areas as well? Like, I know people who are fanatically using messengers, and they would never ever use IRC. And then there are people who spend days on message boards, but they would never ever set a foot in Second Life. So I think that the online communities are much segmented. It's not something that is specific for Second Life. I think the breakthrough will come when more and more people will see that it's useful for their daily lives. Like, for example, my parents, who are 74 by now, got a computer last year because they noticed that they can no longer live without email, because their friends no longer give them printed pictures, for example, but they give them a CD. And they now realized, they felt that they were too old and they do not have to learn this. And now they find, well, they have users in their life for this. And now they're getting it. And I think that will happen at some point with virtual worlds like Second Life. Scott, what about the time?
We can do 5 more minutes.
Okay.
I just want to say, to address that last comment, in Second Life, I'm modal. I am in a particular place, interacting in a particular way. When I'm reading my email, I'm also simultaneously web surfing and checking IRC all at the same time. They're all on my screen. And that's one reason I won't ever do the same thing in Second Life, because I have to be in the email place wherever my email comes in. And I have to be in the IRC place wherever I can chat with people. And I want to do all those at the same time because I'm ADD. So we haven't been able to do that, and that's not going to work in Second Life mode.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There are specific things what a virtual world is good for, and there are some things that it's not good for.
Well, I disagree about the IRC thing, because any group chat, there's group chat all the time.
Yeah, I'm in 3 different IRC servers and about 7 channels in each.
Yeah, you put that support to that Second Life.
But sometimes IRC is simply good enough, and you do not need a 3D environment to. But there are other things. What I really like about Second Life, it's the only place where I can be together with someone online without having to talk. Like, I can sit and watch the sunset. I can go swimming with someone.
Why?
No. I can dance. Because it's nice. Like, I really noticed after being in Second Life that sometimes I have friends that I only know online. And, like, with some of them, we are chatting. And at some point they will say, press a blue button. It means, are you still there? So, like, experiencing togetherness is something that you can do very well in Second Life, and that you cannot do as well in a chat. In a chat, you have to say something, lol, just to let them know, hi, I'm still there, I'm still listening. And this is something that I find very fascinating in Second Life. You can just be with other people. That's very fun. It's beautiful. One more? Yep.
I don't have a question so much as a comment. To kind of give an example, both to kind of continue what we were just talking about and to reference something you were talking about earlier. You know, you were talking about how they have like the conferences that they do in Second Life, and
talked about the documentary that you saw. I mean, there's other things that you can do. I mean, so that's strictly for entertainment and social purposes. I've seen groups that people get together and watch episodes of TV shows. Specifically, like the one I watched was Mystery Science Theater 3000. You know, there's
yep. Yeah.
See that.
It's amazing. I've
well,
been
I
in.
Try. Let me say that my computer's not quite smart enough, and it crashed on me. But I mean, they get together in a room and they stream an episode, and everybody's there watching it. And they have their own commentary going, you know, along with which depending on which season it is, you know, Joel or Mike and the robots.
Yeah. But isn't that beautiful? I'm in Second Life for about 3 years now, and I really try to get an idea of more or less everything that exists there. Like, I want to know how you build. I want to know how you design a t-shirt. I wrote a book about it. And still I know that I only touched a very, very, very small percentage of all the places and people and applications and projects that exist. And I could spend 30 more years just to scratch the surface. And this is what is really fascinating.
It's like the internet. For every one thing you discover, like 100 new things.
Yeah. I think we have to close
we
now.
Should probably wrap up.
Okay, if there is a last question, no, then we'll call it a day. Thank you very much for being here. This was a very interesting discussion. Thank you.